सतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिने अम्ब त्वाम् अनुसन्दधामे भगवद्गीते भवद्वेष्णी। As we have been studying in this weekly class of this great scripture, which explains the goal of life and the way to it, it is a total transformation from where we are to where we want to reach in life. It is like a journey that you begin at a point and you have a destination in mind, and then through stages you get to that destination. So here too we see that there are different stages of this journey. The journey should be like transforming you in a holistic sense, complete sense. Not that only your legs have gone there and your head has remained where you were. That is not a complete proper journey. The transformation of personality should be holistically there, done in every aspect of our personality, our intellect, our emotions, our tendencies of work and physical life, all must get this light of truth. They all must get permeated by this awareness of truth. And we saw in that Lord has been teaching. The teacher is Lord himself, not an ordinary being. The emphasis on this is because to show these two principles. One is that there is no ignorance there. The teacher has no ignorance. Teacher is fully aware of the truth as well as how a person can be illumined with it. In what sense the person needs the light of truth, to what extent and in what manner, that is fully known to Lord. Also, another very important aspect of teachership is compassion. Lord is full of compassion for us. There is no ulterior motive in imparting this knowledge. And therefore, we see this knowledge that is coming from these words is simply supreme in its efficiency, in its efficacy, in transforming our life if we take it. We saw that initially it was the confusion of Arjuna was there about work, and which is a very common state that we fall in. We feel that lot of these activities that we have to do or we are forced to do, they create the disturbance in the mind, and therefore if we escape them, then we shall feel that sense of calmness and the inner serenity that we long for. We want peace, and therefore the first natural impulse is all this work surrounding me, so many people with their complaints, and then their peculiar tendencies, the world is full of selfishness, and I don't like to work in this, let me get away, and then I will feel that serenity. A commonly seen idea. But Lord shows that this is not the proper way, the right way of looking at these things. In fact, by avoiding work, trying to get away from your responsibilities and duties will make you more miserable and more, the peace will be lost more in life. You will become more restless because of that. The right way is to do these activities or these works which are your duties in a proper manner. Doing them in a wrong manner leads to suffering and restlessness and all that, a bondage. Not doing them makes the state much worse. The trick or the key is to do them in a proper way. That is, to do them without getting attached to the results or attached to the doership. And that is the great secret that we had been learning in Bhagavad Gita, which has tremendous practical efficacy in our day-to-day life. As we have always seen that this is a practical science. That is, in just as in case of all practical sciences, like say engineering or chemistry or whatever such things, you have to learn them in workshops or in laboratory and apply them as you go along. So that makes you learn them better. I remember our chemistry professor used to tell in the classes that while I am explaining you these things on the classroom, on the this board, and you have the books, but that won't help you much to learn chemistry. You have to get into labs, do experiments, and understand those things at a more practicable level. So here also, these things, as one implements these in our day-to-day life, then we shall see how they bring about a wonderful inner transformation. And that is the matter of journey. The progress takes place in life gradually through these. And the sixth chapter that we are studying, it is called Dhyana Yoga or Abhyasa Yoga, which literally, the first name literally means the yoga of meditation. The word Dhyana, from which a popular word that is Zen comes, you know, Zen, Zen meditation, Zen Buddhism, this word Zen is really an aberration of the Sanskrit word Dhyana. So Dhyana means meditation, concentration. So that is one name, learning the science of meditation. And another is Abhyasa Yoga. Abhyasa means repeated practice. The stress is laid here on a repeated practice because this is not a matter of very quick results. If we are seeking results in a very short time, then we end up in failure. We should be prepared to give a proper time for it. And then we will see that our lives will be accordingly transformed, fulfilled. So, Abhyasa Yoga. So, we see here that meditation is just a part of the whole practice. Sitting in meditation is not whole practice of spiritual life. It is a part of it. our work should be, life at work should be conducive to that. Our relations with each other must be conducive to that. Our other parts of life, like our eating, our sleeping, our relaxing and entertainment and all that, all must be really strung together. Then that meditation becomes a helpful ingredient. It is very important, friends. But the importance doesn't mean that that alone should be done or that alone will be helpful. That is why only one of these 18 chapters is devoted to meditation. It is very important. Like you add salt to various preparations. And now it is good, it is important, it imparts taste. But imagine the food is only salt. Then it is not worth eating. It is not food at all. So, similarly, meditation is important in that sense. Of course, don't stretch this analogy. Analogy is only to make one understand. So, it is important from that point of view. It has to be there. Without that, spiritual life is not complete. But that is one part, one aspect of this whole process of, spiritual life building. So, Lord therefore said that in last verse, last Bhagavad Gita class, we saw that everything that yuktahara viharasya, the 17th verse, that he who is moderate in food and movements, in his engagements in action, and in sleep and wakefulness, attains to yoga which destroys misery. So, in everything one must be doing those things in an appropriate, proper way and in proper proportions. There is no set rule in the sense that all must take only 2000 calories. Depends on what your lifestyle is, what is your constitution, what is your metabolism, what is your age and all those factors, you see. So, for somebody, 2000 calories will be too little. For somebody, it will be much more than what is needed. So, yukta means what is proper. It is not that all should take the same kind of food or the same quantity of food. Whatever makes our mind and our body tuned to this ideal, that kind of food, that kind of rest, that kind of work, all are not suitable or constitutionally open to all different types of work. Some are open more to physical work, some are more towards intellectual work, and some have a natural tendency to be poetic and they like to do work of that type. So, it is not that everybody should be given the same work, that all should like Shakespeare, everybody should write plays. That will be terrible. Not same person, one person cannot do everything and not all persons will be able to do the same thing either. So, what is constitutionally suitable? What is beneficial for one's spiritual life, accordingly one must take up these disciplines and stick to them, go ahead with them. So, that is the great message. It is not a matter of regimentation. It is not even a matter of imitating somebody else. It is following one's constitution so that the life progresses towards the ideal. After telling this, Now Lord has been describing that how the effects come in life, that this person when practices like this, in the 18th verse it is said that with this practice, when the mind well controlled remains fixed in the self alone, and one is free from craving for all enjoyments, then one is said to have attained yoga. So, the life gradually transforms itself, and the tendency to seek enjoyment from various objects, that is reduced and gone. It is gone because you know that all bliss is with me already. So the tendency to seek it from something outside goes away. The chittam atmani eva avatishtate, in the Atman alone it is established. And thus, that is the secret of the success in yoga, that you are now established in this supreme state. And then the analogy that we were trying to just in the meditation before we began the class, that imagine a flame of a lamp that is kept in a place where there is no breeze, and then the flame burns without flickering, without vibrations. It is steadily burning. So that is an analogy, a comparison for the mind of a yogi. It does not flicker, it does not get distracted by all the various events and objects. It judges them steadily. That steadiness, that being established in truth, that becomes the hallmark of this yogi's mind. Patanjali describes these things, that is how the yoga culminates. He says, what is the purpose of yoga in life? In the second aphorism, Patanjali says, first chapter, second aphorism, that yoga chitta vritti nirodha. That what is yoga? It is controlling all the mental modifications. Mind gets thrown out into so many modifications. Just take the position of observer of our thoughts, and we can easily see how they get scattered all around. In fact, one gets identified with all those modifications. We become one with those modifications, and thus lose our independence, lose also the inner poise and happiness. And therefore we suffer. Yoga is the way by which one attains to this poise. Therefore, Patanjali says, yoga is controlling, the science of controlling all the mental modifications. And we know how tormenting it is, how much energy gets wasted in this. The other day I was reading in a book of this neuroscience, and it was said that the tremendous brain activity goes on in a wasteful manner in what is called daydreaming. Daydreaming keeps on and on, and although we know that it is all wasteful, it doesn't mean anything. The mind goes on reconstructing the past, That when I was 9 years old, had that happened, then I would have become like this, and then it would have been, then I would have done. It is said that it is so difficult to stop it. This is all getting the mind scattered. We are not practicing this yoga, and therefore this is the state of affairs. That the mind gets all implicated into these modifications. Not only that, it gets identified with them. In the third aphorism, therefore, Patanjali says, Vritti Sarupyam Itaratra, that when it is in a non-controlled state, what happens to the mind? Vritti Sarupyam. It gets identified with the modifications. We say that a person became angry. Is really an understatement. The person becomes anger at that time. What is that person? It is anger. The mind of that person is anger. Similarly, the mind of that person, when the fear overtakes, there is the fear. This person gets identified with fear. With all such emotions, one gets identified with them. So Patanjali uses a great expression here, that vritti sarupyam. One becomes identified with those modifications. So a yogi, through practice, gradual transformation of awareness and personality, comes to a stage where now the awareness or the mind is focused on the truth, becomes one, or let us say, gets its true identity, knows that I am not this changing body and mind. I am the unchanging self. The body kept on changing all the time and will keep on changing. Its modifications will go on. I don't have to identify with them. So, it's like that. One then is truly poised and peaceful. So, this is the state described here. Yatha dipo nivatastho nengate sopama smrita yogino yata chittasya yunjato yogamatmanah. Lord said here that I am just quoting a very well-known illustration or comparison for this mind of yogi. Even as a lamp placed in a place free from any breeze does not flicker. This is the simile for a yogi of controlled mind, practicing concentration on self. And then Lord continues with the characteristics, different aspects of this state. And we can learn by comparison that this is really what we have been seeking in life. That whatever we want in life is really achieved in this state. So if we achieve this state, then you get all those things together. You don't have to separately go for these. It is like going into a store which gives you everything. You can buy everything that you need at one place. If you go there, you get everything that you need. Lord says your true nature is that store where you get all the happiness that you were craving for, all the peace that you had been craving for, all the knowledge that you had been craving for, all love that you were aspiring for, all will be given to you, all you will get there in infinite quantity. So that is why it is what is shown in a few verses to come. The 20th verse. Yatro paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashyan atmanitushyati sukhamatyantikam yattat buddhigrahyamatindriyam vetti yatra nachaivayam sthitashchalati tatvatah. Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadhikam tatah yasmin sthito na dukhena gurunapi vichalyate. So Lord says that state in which the mind controlled by the practice of concentration gets settled, in which seeing the self by the purified mind, one is satisfied with the self, in which one realizes same absolute transcendent bliss which is experienced through the intellect, established in which one does not waver from the truth, attaining which one thinks of no other acquisition as greater than that, and established in which one is not perturbed even by the great pain. So that is the nature of this yoga, that it gives us firstly sukham atyantikam. This the 20th verse says first that yatra uparamate chittam, that when the mind, now uparamate is a very beautiful Sanskrit word. Uparamate means starts returning, starts getting calmed down. Like, you know, it is when you understand that you have been driving in the wrong direction. Just an analogy, friends. Then, when you realize you first reduce the speed with which you were going in the wrong direction. Oh my goodness, I must now stop and come back in the right direction. So you start reducing the speed. That is called uparama. Means whatever you were doing, now that you reduce and stop, that is the meaning of it. That going in the wrong direction, when you realize it, and if you are a sane person, you naturally think that now it is, I had made a mistake, and let me come to the right track. And so the speed with which you were going in the wrong direction, that is first reduced. And we go headlong in the search of the sensual pleasures and think that more money will buy, be able to get more of it. We go headlong in the pursuit of these things. It is, if we just take a close look at our priorities in life, we will be able to see this thing, that those things being the highest, topmost priorities, our life, our mind runs headlong towards them with the maximum possible speed. In fact, we are in competition. Let me run fast, as fast, so that I will overtake everybody and get it before somebody else snatches it. So that is why we are in kind of this race, and always tense, that somebody else will get it before I get it. And it is, therefore, we are not at rest. And even if we get the desired object, we soon find that it was not enough to satiate us, it was not enough to fill the tremendous gap or cavity that we were feeling, we were sensing in our heart, that whatever we got through this mad rush was not enough for it. So, once we get a sense that this is not the right thing to do, we press the brakes. Oh well, let me come on the right path. I should not go in this direction. Let me give it a thought. It seems that I am on a wrong path. So, that is called uparama. Yeah, that the mind now starts working to stop from this rush. And how it happens? Yoga sevaya. By this practice of yoga, this is the first sign that happens, uparama, that the mind is no more craving for the sense enjoyments to that extent. They rush for that, the craving for that gets stopped gradually. So, and what happens then? Not that the person lacks happiness. One may feel that if I do not rush to the money or the sense enjoyments, then naturally all the happiness I get depends on those things. If I don't rush to them, then the heart will be all full of that sadness, suffering, misery and such things. I will always look morose. The life will be sad life. No friends. And you will get the joy of a much higher type. That is mentioned here, that Atmana Atmanam Pashyan Atmani Tushyati. That tushyati means this person becomes happy. But now, the happiness does not depend on getting this object or that object or this person or that person or whatever. That happiness is not mortgaged now with anything in this world. When it is mortgaged with something, naturally, we are not masters of that happiness now. Because if somebody gives me, then only I get it. Ice cream, give me some happiness. If I keep on begging, then what happens? My happiness is in the ice cream. You know, if ice cream gives me, I get it. And ice cream does not always give it. You may have ice cream, but can you get happiness from ice cream all the time? You cannot. You eat a scoop, you feel happy. One more scoop you eat, the happiness, you know, goes on decreasing in inverse proportion. More the quantity, less the happiness. So it is, afterwards it becomes rather painful. So, these objects, they do not have the capacity to give happiness all the time. Again, it depends on them. Moreover, even if we get the feel, I am getting happiness, it goes away quickly. It is ice cream happiness from here, where ice cream touches your tongue, you get some happiness, and in a second, it goes down the throat, happiness also goes away with it. What is left then is the hard work for the intestines. So, that is the nature of these pleasures. And everything in the world that we seek happiness from, that happiness is of this type. But this yogi gets the happiness of a very different type. The happiness from the direct source of happiness. Atmani, Atmana, beautiful words, you know, that you get the happiness coming from self. So first important thing about it, it is not dependent or mortgage in something else. It is right with you. You don't have to rush to something to get it. It is not dependent on somebody. If you think that this man or this woman is the source of happiness for me, well, it depends on that person's availability and also the mood of that person. It is not that you may, and it is not always that you can therefore get it. And even if you get a little bit of it, simply gets exhausted, leaving a much deeper gap inside. And therefore, look at the, in comparison, what is this kind of happiness that the yogi gets? Atmani, Atmana. It is, therefore, of a very special type. Pashyan Atmani Tushyati, that he says, the true self. And that is the source of all bliss. And thus you get it. Therefore it is so important to practice this discipline in Bhagavad Gita. Remember, practicing yoga doesn't mean only meditation. We have told this again and again. We have seen this in Bhagavad Gita again and again, that meditation must be practiced, no doubt about it. But that is an integrated part of a bigger picture of yoga. All these things are to be integrated in life, then only the meditation becomes helpful and useful. Then, what is then the another thing, a characteristic of this happiness? Sukham atyantikam yattat buddhi grahyam atendriyam veti yatra nachayvayam sthitashchalati tatvatah. That it is not dependent again on anything, and also it is how one gets it in the state of yoga is, first of all, it is immense in its intensity. One aspect of happiness that one considers is that we want to have more and more intense happiness. We just become tense instead of getting intense happiness, that's all. So, it is, we don't get that happiness from any object in the world. It is impossible. In its very nature, it is impossible. But here, we get that intensity of happiness, immense intensity. That is told here, atyantikam, tremendously big in quantity and intensity. There is a beautiful discussion that comes to mind in this context. It comes in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad as well as in a little detailed form in Taittiriya Upanishad about how much happiness this knower of the self gets. It is immense, but let us make a comparison, let us make a calculation, and we all want to quantify things here, that okay, suppose I eat ice cream, let me quantify it, I get say 1 pound of happiness, or some unit we will put, that this happiness of eating ice cream, suppose it is 1 pound. So, the happiness of the knower of the self, how many pounds will it be? Can we put a measure to it? Then this Upanishad starts, let us start counting, let us start weighing that happiness, it says. Very interesting, you know, some of these stories in Upanishads are great. The Taittiriya Upanishad says that they started weighing it. So, for weighing happiness, they thought that this happiness coming from eating ice cream is too little to measure this. Like when you want to measure a great distance, you don't measure it in inches, you see. That you use, for example, how much is the distance from this Providence to San Francisco? You don't say so many inches. It is too many. You know, then you say in miles. But when it comes to still bigger distances, like what is the distance between the Earth and the Sun? Then you calculate in terms of light seconds, light minutes, light years, and so forth. You know, so bigger units need to be taken for measuring bigger things. You cannot measure them. It becomes too tedious to measure them with smaller units. So for measuring this immense happiness, a big unit had to be established. First big unit was a human limit of happiness, whatever one can get through the senses. So imagine a young person in fully blooming youth and perfect health, and such a person has been given all the wealth and all the objects of enjoyment that are available on this earth. Whole thing is given to that person without any worry or competition. That is the first unit. That this is called Manusha Ananda, a human happiness. And then they started measuring with this. Then after putting 100 such units, they found that all these 100 units, they were already there in the happiness of this person who is has control of senses and has the self-knowledge. So they decided now to use a bigger unit, 100 times of that. Then they put those 100 units. Still, they saw that the person of self-knowledge has that joy already there. So they decided to take hundreds of those units. See already how big it has become. That joy of eating ice cream or a candy or such thing has paled into a total insignificance here. That happiness, that like that 100 times were calculated, this process went on 7-8 times. And every time they saw, well, that happiness is already included in the happiness of this person of self-knowledge. And then how much it is then? The one who was measuring became perplexed. And how far do we go in this calculation? Then the sage said, you know, what you had been measuring was only a shadow of happiness. Real happiness can never be counted in terms of shadows. Can you? You cannot. The real happiness that never goes away, and that in intensity is supreme in comparison with any of these things. So it said there with a twinkle in the eye, the sage says that this happiness is fulfilling. This happiness is just not measurable at all in terms of the subject-object contact happiness. Subject-object contact happiness is only a shadow of happiness. It is not a real happiness at all. It is like how many these fake $100 bills, fake $100 bills will compare even one real dollar. Well, all fake bills, $100 or $500, whatever denomination, even if it is a big pile, it is a huge trash, that's all. If they do not compare, you cannot buy anything with it. In fact, you have to pay to dispose it. Now, here, $1 is much more than that, a real thing. So, this a yogi, a knower of the truth, gets the real happiness. And so you can never measure it in terms of illusory happiness. That which is another name of suffering. We call it happiness, but it is in effect just suffering and bondage. So, in fact, the pleasure or happiness is a misnomer there. So, that is why Lord says that it is a buddhi grahyam, and then specifies atindriyam. You cannot get it through the sense organs. You have to transcend the sense organs. Our sense organs keep on deceiving us, binding us by pulling us towards different objects and enslaving us to them. So a yogi learns to transcend them and thus establishes oneself in truth. And there the person, that yogi, feels the true happiness in life. And moreover, another characteristic of that is, when you get some real happiness, then you don't want to get away from it. Compare it with our worldly happiness. For example, if a music lover listens to music, the happiness of listening music, wonderful, 15 minutes, so you feel nice. Then you take a cookie and start eating, because that happiness of music is okay, but not that much. After half an hour, you feel bored with it enough. If you are a real, very deeply involved music lover, and if the music is really exquisite, you may tolerate it for an hour or so. Maybe 2 hours. And that's about it. Then you feel tired of it. And you feel, well, I don't care to have any music for another month or so. It is a person who used to like a particular that candy and said, I love it so much, I can eat any quantity of it. And then they said, okay, come on, take it, you know, we will give you as much as you can eat. And then he said, well, 1 pound I can finish very quickly. Okay, here are 5 pounds of that. Come on, start eating. Ate it. After eating about half a pound, the person said that, it is, I can eat 1 pound, but it is a little tough now. It is, and tastes all too much sweet. Can you give me some other salt or some spice by that side, so that by applying it I can eat, finish 1 pound. And then they said, okay, fine. And then when it was about the 1 pound was about to be finished, they were all encouraging that fellow, come on, you can finish it, you know, go on. And when very little was left, this person became kind of unconscious, because I can't take any more, and fell unconscious. And then that it was a village place, so doctor, a village doctor, was called to revive him. The doctor said, oh, does it, after examining, that this is fine, not in a little bit time that fellow will be revived. But give him this medication, it will act like magic. Give him that medication. but this medication is too bitter. So mix it with, he's unconscious, he didn't know. So they told the name of that very candy. Mix it with this candy and give it to him. As soon as this fellow heard the name of that candy, he just got up and started running away. No more of that. So it's like that. This is the, you don't like those things after a limit. You want to run away from that. So, but when you get this real happiness, na sthitas chalati tatvatah, you don't then get away from it. Because this is what you were really seeking. That is a very different thing. Seeking momentarily. I remember case, and that is not very singular either. That a girl used to tell that, I'll want to get married with this. I cannot imagine life without him. And after some years started saying that I cannot imagine life with him. It is very, you know, and that is... Why so? It is not somebody's fault. It is, then you say that girl's fault or that boy's fault or it is not the fault of any of them. This is the fault or the nature of the things itself. They don't have capacity to please you all the time and to the degree that you want. And all the expectations therefore get kicked out. So, therefore you want to move to some other object. But when this real source of happiness is found by this person, which is beyond the senses, what happens? Then you don't want to waver from there. You got that what you were seeking. And so this person's nature is established in that. Then another thing that is described in the next verse, that you do not consider anything in life more than this. You are completely fulfilled, satiated. In our worldly happiness, this doesn't happen. You keep on looking for more, more, more. But this happiness, this state completely fulfills you. You do not seek anything more. And then also, even in this state, the regular sufferings of carrying this body in this world, they come in torrents. You are not disturbed by this. This is a very important, beautiful verse. And we shall try to study it more. Today's time is finished, so we will try to do that in our next Friday's class. Any questions? So let us conclude with the closing prayers.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarehi Yasvayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinesrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantrah Tasya Namaniyane Karma Pyekam Tasya Devasya Seva.